In detail, the randomization of the 5-4 COE at one loop, so at first order in the quantum expansion in terms of H bar or in terms of the coupling constant. And I discussed it for a special case, which is the case of the massless COE, the COE that has a massless particle in its spectrum, well, both because it's important from the point of view of physics and because it's the simplest case. So today, we are going to continue to discuss the property of the renormalized massless 5-4 theory in order to see the appearance of a very important feature of quantum field theory, that is the fact that, in general, the couplings depends on the energy scale at which they are measured. That's called the phenomenon of having a running coupling constant. And it leads to the important discovery of a feature called the renormalization group and renormalization group transformations. That tells you how a quantum field theory gets transformed, or rather how the observable of a quantum field theory gets transformed when you make scale transformation, dilation in space. So you look them at different scales. So we are going to discuss a normalization group. Again, in the feature of the massless 5-4 theory, mainly at one loop, and of course in the framework of perturbation theory. And tomorrow, I will discuss the other approach of renormalization, that is a Wilsonian approach, that is a non-perturbative approach that is supposed to work even beyond perturbation theory, and that it does work in many cases when you can do calculation in a non-perturbative way. Okay. So remember, we started from the massless 5-4 theory, and we saw that, in fact, in order to get ultraviolet cutoff free sensible theory, in fact, we have to start from a functional integral. For instance, if I'm using my favorite quantization scheme, that is functional integration, well, I set for simplicity espa to zero. But you have to use an action that is, in general, that in fact depends on the cutoff because it has to be taken to be of the form. It's the usual, well, I'm in four dimension. It's the usual action for a 5-4 theory. But in general, you don't know exactly what are the coefficients, the parameter in the action you have to use in order to get something that is sensible at the energy scales you are probing. So in fact, you have to use some coefficient, well, normalized here like C. I call this, that's just a nomination. And we have seen that in order to have a sensible correlation function, so of course this is a functional integral, let's say this is the partition function for your path integral, and you compute the renormalized correlation function, phi of x1, phi of xn. I'm still in the Euclidean framework, but don't forget that you can go back to real time just by a Vick rotation. So I'm writing this in the Euclidean framework just not to pay attention to the I factor. So you define the renormalized, or rather a correlation function for the renormalized theory simply as the usual way. You compute with the renormalized action expectation value of your fields. And you normalized by d phi as usual to get rid of the vacuum diagrams. Okay, so that's just the definition of the correlation function. And we have seen that in order to, if you renormalize those coefficients in the correct way, these correlation functions are well defined when the ultraviolet cutoff goes to infinity. So in the continuum limit, you can get rid of the ultraviolet cutoff well when expressed in terms of the renormalized coupling GR at first order. And we have seen that the renormalized coupling has been defined as the value of the irreducible four-point function for some typical momenta for momenta P1, P4 of the order of mu, the renormalization scale. Okay. And let me rewrite just the form of this coefficient. We have seen that A is 1. You have no correction at that order. Or the coefficient of the derivative term. We have seen that coefficient B has to be equal to 0 at tree level because we are dealing with a massless 5-4 theory. But then we have to introduce the correction, which is proportional to lambda squared, which is a mass counter term. That's how you must modify the mass in this renormalized action so that the theory is massless, the physical mass. So massless means physical mass equals 0. And then you have this gr squared term. And finally, most important, the coupling constant rewrites as the tree level, the classical coupling constant. But then you must introduce the renormalization of the coupling constant term because there are corrections, radiative corrections to the coupling constant, and they are given by this factor that we computed. Okay. So this is a mass renormalization and this is a coupling constant renormalization at one loop. Okay. And we have seen that in the case of the massless 5-4 theory, not only we are sure that this works, but we can even compute easily the four-point function. So let me compute the irreducible renormalized four-point function. This is the irreducible renormalized open function. Okay. And its form was explicitly, it was very simple. It was just well, the classical tree-level results that is just the definition of the coupling constant. And then we had a minus gr squared times a sum of the contribution of the three diagrams. Remember that this is given by this diagram minus G, so there is a minus the sum of these diagrams, etc. And once you compute the contribution of this diagram expressed as a function of this coupling constant, you got a logarithm of mu squared over P1 plus P2 squared. A simple logarithm, so a simple factor plus, well, the same thing with P1 plus P2. plus p3, I'm sorry, plus the same coefficient with mu squared to p1 plus p4 squared. So a very simple formula. Okay. So we have seen that, of course, this expression depends on gr and on mu. So we have seen that this depends on gr and on mu. Yes? Here? No.
But then why do we have order of GR squared?
This is GR everywhere.
Okay.
This is GR, this is GR, this is GR, this is GR. I'm sorry. Here, this is GR cube. Yes, of course. Of course. Sorry. Yes. Yes, because this coefficient is classically GR. We computed the first correction at one loop. So the second correction that we haven't computed is, of course, of order GR squared. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so, and then plus, let us be careful. Here are the next correction. Okay, so we have seen that this, in fact, seemingly, this depends on both GR, the renormalized coupling constant, the renormalized coupling GR, and of mu. So this seemingly depends on mu, the renormalization scale. Okay. But as I explained yesterday, in fact, that's not surprising because the renormalized coupling constant is defined from the value of some observable of the theory at a given energy scale. And this results tells you that if you make the measurements of the four-point function at a different energy scale, you will get a different result, you see. So in fact, the renormalized GR depends on mu for a given theory. Theory being characterized just by the value of all its observables. So we take a quantum field theory, it is characterized by the value of all the vacuum expectation value of products of operator, because out of that you can define all the matrix element of the vacuum of the states in the Hilbert space of the theory. So you can reconstruct the full quantum theory if you are good enough in math or good enough at experiments out of this. Okay. So for the same theory, GR in fact depends on mu. And that's expressed from the fact that, for instance, if you take two different mu and mu prime, gamma r of, the momenta here. So you have some momenta, pa. Let me take a general endpoint function. Well, this depends on GR and on mu, but you might want to compare the two 4-point function as expressed as a function for two different energy scale. Okay. So you take a mu one, and then you have a GR of mu one. And if I take a mu two, I expect that if I measure this at a scale mu1, I will get a GR of mu1, a GR1, let us say, GR1. And here I get a GR2. That's what I explained yesterday. Okay, but they are the same. We are making computing two different quantities for the same theory. Okay. So there is a relation between GR of mu1 computed and mu1 and GR of mu2 computed and mu2. Well, you can work out this very easily. Looking at the expression of the four-point function. And you can check very easily that, roughly speaking, GR of mu1 has to satisfy GR of mu1 minus GR of mu1 squared 3 half 1 over 4 pi squared logarithm of mu1 squared has to be equal simply to GR of mu2 minus GR of mu2 squared 3 half of logarithm of mu2 squared. If there is this relation, of course, you have to divide by some units of mass. But if you insert this GR of mu1, GR of mu2 with a scale mu2 in the expression for the four-point function, or if you insert GR of mu1 that satisfies this expression as a function of mu1, you can check that you get here a four-point function P4 that is equal to P4. And you can check that it will be true for not only for the four-point function, it will be true for the two-point function, well, simply because it doesn't depend on GR, and it will be true also for the endpoint function, simply because you need them to compute them just at one loop. Okay. Okay. So you see that you have a relation between the coupling constant at different scale. Okay. So this means that these couplings, the renormalized coupling, is what is called a running coupling. It depends on the scale. Okay. Well, you may also notice from this expression that if you take here as a constant, that it doesn't depend change between this and that, it means simply that this coefficient, C, is the same. If you express that, so this is equivalent to state that the coefficient C expressed as a function of, so you see, C depends on GR of lambda and of mu. This simply that C of GR of mu1 lambda is equal to C of GR of mu2 and lambda. So that's the reason why we get the same correlation function or irreducible function. That's because, in fact, we are computing with the same renormalized action. Okay. Same renormalized action. Yes.
I guess I'm concerned about the B term in the action. Like, how do you know that? Because if C1 is equal to C2, then B1 is not necessarily equal to
yes.
B2.
Yes.
And so, I mean, are you guaranteed that that's not going to affect your correlation function?
Ah, you are worried by the fact that GR will differ here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are right. But the difference is at order GR squared. So the difference will be felt in this term. And it turns out that if you work out calculation, well, the correction at two loops and renormalized properly, everything works well. But that's a very good question. I'm working here at first order in perturbation theory, taking into account only one loop diagrams. Okay. And in any way, again, here, we are dealing with a massless theory. So this coefficient, as a rule, you know, this coefficient in the rule theory, if we are able to compute it at higher orders, it will be fixed by the condition that the theory is massless. And this condition is the same irrespective of the renormalization scale we have chosen to define the renormalized coupling constant. So we are sure that we are on good track for that, at least. Okay. So now, of course, this is a bit of a complicated relation. We wrote it for a simple theory, but it could be different from different theory. So in fact, it's better to write the mu dependence of the renormalized coupling. Better to write this as a differential equation. See? Making small changes in mu and writing. So we make a small change in mu. We start from a mu, let us say mu 1. We start from mu equal mu 1, and we write mu 2 equal mu plus some small variation. And see that in this case, gr of mu 1 is given by some value of g, and then g1, and then g2, which is gr of mu 2, will be given by a small variation. It will be g1 plus some small variation delta of g1. You see. So the question is, so the idea is simply, we are going to write, yes, we are going to write how gr of mu changes with mu with a condition that at some fixed mu 1, gr of mu, well, let's just call it mu 0, because it will be, no, mu 0 is fixed to be some gr 0 fixed. You see, we fix the, we choose at some energy scale mu naught, renormalization scale mu naught, the renormalized coupling constant to be fixed, and we look at how, when computed at different energy scales, it changes. Okay, so it's gonna, since there are logs of mu, in fact, it's better to write the logarithmic derivative with respect to mu of gr of mu. So here, take mu 1 to be mu 0. Well, let us just, yes, and see how gr of mu 2 changes when you change mu 2, this being fixed. Okay, so it's a very easy calculation. You just write that for a small variation of delta mu, you get a small variation of gr. Okay. And, well, we can do the calculation, in fact. We find that here is the delta of gr, is delta of gr times gr, and you have a delta of log mu times gr mu squared. You said that the total variation is 0, and you get that finally, that's, this is simply given by, well, you have a 3 over, or there was a factor 1 over 2 pi, 4 pi squared that I forgot. But at the end, you get 3 over 4 pi squared gr of mu squared. Plus higher order terms. That is okay. So you see that this takes the form of a differential equation. That is local in gr of mu. So the variation, when you make a small variation in mu, the variation depends only on GR at the renormalization scale you started from, simply. Okay. And it's very simple, it's just GR mu squared. So we get a very simple differential equation. And this differential equation tells you how GR of mu depends of mu for a fixed physical quantity. So this means this is fixed. This means that for a given physical theory. Okay. So this equation is a differential equation that defines a flow in the space of coupling. Here, the space of coupling is just a line because we have one coupling. But in general theory, where there are several coupling constants, the same phenomenon will occur. Okay. So this function is called the beta function, beta of gr of mu. Beta function. Okay. And so that's the general definition of the beta function, how a renormalized coupling depends on the renormalization scale when the physics is fixed. And this is the results of the beta function for the phi 4 theory. Okay. So this denomination of beta function, it's a bit strange, it's just historical. It comes from papers by Kurt Kallan and Simancic around the 30, in the 30s, something like that. But in fact, the fact that the renormalized coupling depends on the scale was discovered much before by in the context of QED, I think. In QED, by Gell-Mann and Lau, and by, I just have to find how to spell the name correctly, by Stückelberg and Petermann. And how do I spell Petermann? How many N do they have? Petermann. And this was in 53, and Gell-Mann and Lau was in 54. So the same thing happens for the coupling constant of QED, that is the charge of the electron. For alpha, let us say. Alpha, the fine structure constant. Okay. And so that's a very important feature. Okay. And in this case, what does this mean? Now, of course, we did a one-loop calculation. We obtain this relation for the scale renormalization scale variation of the coupling constant. But we know that it's true irrespective of the value of GR. Well, of course, you have higher order time of order GR squared, but a better way to see how GR depends on mu means to integrate application integrate this equation. It's a differential equation. Okay? We are going to do that just now, in fact. So if you integrate this equation, you see that, well, it's easy. It's a homework exercise of first year of study of differential equation, you find that gr of mu, if I start from a mu naught, some mu naught scale, is given by gr of mu naught divided by 1 minus 3 over 4 pi squared gr of mu naught times the logarithm of mu divided by mu naught. If I neglect the higher order terms. So this is true as long as gr is small. Valid as long as gr of mu not too big. Okay. And you see that for the 5-4 theory, there is a plus sign here. And therefore, as a function of mu, log mu, this decreases when the numerator decreases when mu becomes large, so this increases. And when mu becomes small, when you go to low energy, this increases, so this decreases. So we have a behavior like that for gr of mu. Okay? You see that the running Kopli constant is small at small energy, mu small, and large at large energies. And that comes just from the sign of the beta function. Okay. Well, of course, you may object that there is a pole here, so something happened when this is over the one. So for very high energy, we don't really know what's happening. But that's a regime where the one loop approximation is not valid anymore, because gr will be not be small in this regime. It will be of the order what the effective coupling will be. So let's not discuss that at the moment. We'll come back later. Okay. So, now, out of these results, in fact, we can start to do physics. We can start to study how does a correlation function of the 5-4 theory depends on the energy scale. And for that, let us just do the following things. Let us consider a correlation function that I defined later, so phi of x1, phi of xn. So let me rewrite this in the renormalized theory. So let me rewrite this as a green function, g, renormalized of the endpoints. And of course, it depends on gr, as I defined, and on mu. Okay, so this is an endpoint correlation function. Well, I could equivalently study it in momentum space. That's usually, you need the Green function in momentum space because from the Green function in momentum space, you extract you extract the S-matrix element of particles as a function of their momenta. But well, let me just endpoint function. In position space. Same for momentum space. And I'm going to ask the question. I want to compare this green function and the value of this correlation function when I make a rescaling on the position. So I want to compare this to GR. Of SX1, SXN, GR, and mu. So I don't change the coupling constant. I don't change the theory. But I just look at it at different distance. So S will be a scale factor. You see, if S is positive, if S is larger than 1, I'm going to large distances. And at S less than 1, I'm going to small distances. Which means, of course, low energies or momenta and high energy momenta. OK. Good. So, in fact, that's equivalent to perform on renormalization group transformation, as change of the scales, because you can very easily see that this is nothing than computing the renormalized green function, the correlation function for the original value of the position, the same value of the coupling constant, but for a different choice of point of a renormalization scale. And in addition, well, there is something which comes from the dimension of the field that comes and factor S minus N. And that's very easy to see. On the explicit expression we had for the four-point function, you see. Performing a change, so let's just go back in momentum space. Performing a change x into xs is exactly the same thing that changing the momenta into momenta divided by s. You see. But in this expression for the two-point function, dividing the momenta by S, that's mu S, not mu divided by S, that's mu S, I think, is equivalent to change mu into S mu. Because if I change P into P divided by S, that's equivalent to not change P at that order and change mu into mu S. You see? Well, this factor S to the power minus 4 for the four-point function will come out from the fact that G is defined from gamma 4 by Legendre transform and Fourier transform. And when you perform a Fourier transform for going from momenta to S, you have to take into account the fact that X has been changed. So it's just the dimension coming from Fourier transform. Fourier transform. OK. So the relation between this and this is just, this is just dimensional analysis. Okay? But now comes the non-trivial fact that uses renormalization. Changing the renormalization scales is equivalent to change GR. So this is S minus 1, GR of x1, xn. Some GR of S mu. Here we use the results of renormalization calculation. This is a trivial part, it's just doing changing the making scale transformation of my variables when they have a dimension. And this is the non-trivial part. And so you see that then you may compare the original, the green function of the theory at some scale to the correlation function of the theory at a different scale. So you see that rescaling the position or the momenta amounts to a change in the coupling. You see? And we know how the coupling changes with mu. So if you write the equation for this, well, there is just a change. Remember, here we have Here now we do not change GR and we change mu, while the beta function is obtained by saying what's happening when we change mu and GR so that the starting theory doesn't change. So in fact, the equation for this GR of S, we have a renormalization group equation for this GR of S, which is the same than the equation that defines the beta function, except with a minus sign. So the equation is just S d over ds of gr of S equal minus the beta function of gr of S. So not the minus signs. Okay. There is just a minus signs because in the equation that defines the beta function, I'm making a rescaling, a change on a momentum scale, while here I'm making a rescaling with respect to position, which is inverse. So it's just minus signs because I'm performing rescaling on the x's instead of mu, which would be a rescaling on the p's. Just coming from that. Okay. And again, this running coupling becomes large when S goes to zero, small distances, high energy, and small when S goes to infinity, large distances. Okay? So this is the definition of the beta function, and that's just renormalization group flow equation for the coupling, for the running coupling as a function of the scale. Okay? So, yes?
So what you're saying is the scattering amplitudes themselves not change as a function of how high the energy is.
Yes, of course. They depend on the momentum.
The form of the action is not changing.
No.
And this is enforced on us because we're canceling infinity.
No. But it's not. From the cancellation of infinity, but it takes a simple form independent on the fact that, independent of the ultraviolet cutoff. That's the important point. You see, it would be, if assume that you have a theory with an ultraviolet cutoff, like, you know, assume that you are looking near the Planck scale, making collision of black holes of energetic photons which have such an energy that they are almost black holes or things like that, then the equation will be much, much more complicated. But they take a simple form at low energies. The effective theory is quantum electrodynamics or our Phi-4 theory or whatever theory we want. And then the flow equation for the couplings, you have only a small number of effective couplings that characterize the effective theory. And the flow equation for those couplings is very small. And you can compute them. Like, that's a way to compute them. Okay. Good. Okay. So let me go back one remark. This was true for the massless theory. And we used the fact in particular that there is no field renormalization. The coefficient A is equal to 1. Okay. In general, we deal with a theory with a mass, and there is a field renormalization. So the equation are a bit changed. In fact, in general, the relation will be that gr of x1 up to xn gr. Well, let me consider just the situation where the theory is still massless. Then the relation where I add a factor, a scaling factor, will be that it would be indeed equal to gr of x1 xn. We'll have a gr of s and mu. We have this running coupling. But the factor s minus n becomes slightly more complicated. It will become a z of s to the power minus n. Yes? Pardon?
If you rescale x, shouldn't
you
rescale as s plus s to the power minus 1?
Yes. Yes. I'm going to discuss that. I'm sorry.
But if x goes to s, x, mu goes to s plus
s. Yes. So what do you? You are worried with that factor? I'm sorry.
He's saying that if x goes to s, x, mu has to go to s mu because of its half dimensions of energy. So it should.
Yes.
But over there, you've written mu goes to s mu rather than s to the minus 1.
No, if I change, well, in this expression, if I change p into s minus p, this is equivalent to not change p and change mu into s mu, because it's a, you know, we have a function, we have a function of mu over p. So changing mu over p into mu divided by p divided by s is s mu divided by p. So it amounts to change mu into s mu. Okay? Yes?
Over there we said that the gamma of the same momentum equals to the gamma of the same momentum.
Yes.
So we're using different mu.
Yes.
So using different mu corresponds to what the mu at mu one and mu two, the two.
Well, using different mu's, not changing the correlation function means simply defining the renormalized coupling in different ways. Saying the coupling of my theory comes from the result of an experiment at one EV, or the coupling of my theory comes from the result of an experiment at one MEV, or at one GEV. And in general, you get different numbers. So you have to specify when you are saying the coupling constant of, for instance, QCD is as this value, you have to specify at which energy it is defined. And in fact, when you will have a course on the standard model and strong interaction, that's precisely what's going. You know, it is stated that the coupling of QCD has some value. I don't know, it is 3 dot something or something like that. It has some value. But people say, okay, it has such a value in such a renormalization scheme where the mass is taken to be 1 MeV typically. And you have to specify exactly how you have defined it. So when you talk about a coupling in a quantum field theory, you have to specify exactly how it is measured and how it is extracted from the measurement you are doing. And in general, it's a non-trivial task. But you have to precise to make it precise. Otherwise, you are comparing things that are not comparable. You are comparing, I don't know, yards and meters. OK. I don't know really how much a yard is in the function of meter. So you see, I'm in trouble. OK? OK, so let me go back to that. If you have a field renormalization, the factor S minus 1 is changed into a factor ZS. And we'll see that a bit later. And in fact, but you have the same kind of equation. In the same way that GR depends on S, you can write an equation that tells you how the logarithm of Z of S depends on S. And this defines something, some quantity. It obeys some differential equations that depend on GR of S. And this is called the scaling dimension of the field phi. So in the fact that you get a factor minus 1, well, minus, I think the equation is with a minus sign. So the fact that there is a factor S minus 1 at one loop means that the scaling dimension of phi is 1. But there will be correction at two loops in general. OK, but I won't elaborate on that. OK. So, well, I'm almost done. So this kind of transformation, this equation that tells you how the coupling of a theory vary with the scale, in fact, since they are flow equation, they generate, so this renormalization, this equation, this flow equation S D over DS of GR of S equal beta of GR of S, of course, they generate a flow in the space of Pupling. If at S equal 1, you start from a given value of GR, then at S1 larger than 1, you get, well, I've taken probably the opposite, small when S goes to infinity, so it goes the other way, but let us say S1 less than 1. I get a GR of S1, then at S2 larger than 1, I get a GR of S2. But of course, since it's a differential equation, this equation is a group. So you can define that if you start from GR, you can write that GR of S1 is just some transformation depending on S1 of GR. If I start from GR as S equal 1, you see? So it's a transformation. R of S1. But here I've written the transformation R of S2. Okay. And it's very easy, since this comes from the differential equation, that R of S1 times S2 is R of S1 composed with R of S2. So this transformation acts as a group. Well, it's trivial. We are just performing a representation of the group of scale transformation, the multiplicative group of scale transformation, onto the space of theory. So it's almost a triviality. But this group is called the renormalization group. Okay. Good. If I have time, I will go back. I will discuss a little later, what's happening when there is a mass, because that's important too. But before that, let me go back to the significance of this flow equation or of the beta function. Let me discuss a little bit scale invariance. Okay. We have been discussing here what is the how under a scale transformation, a dilation of the position or of the momenta, how the quantum theory behaves. Okay. So such a transformation is called a scale transformation. And so let us go back first to the classical theory. The classical theory is given by an action given by integral. And let me compute it in general d dimension. So it's d mu phi squared plus g over 4 phi to the 4. Okay. Now I define a scale transformation simply as well, with this factor S, let us say, with this factor S, let us keep the notation, I change a field configuration phi into a field configuration phi of S by just defining phi s of x equal s to some exponent phi of s x. Okay. And let me choose delta equal d minus 2 over 2. This will be the the canonical dimension of the field phi. Okay? Then you see that in general, if you make such a transformation, this doesn't change. But this will change, except in four dimensions. For d equal 4, where delta equal 1, if you take any field configuration, the action of phi s is equal to the action of phi. Well, this s is, of course, not the same than the action. So let me write the action s. Well, s, I don't know how to. I forgot how to. OK, so this is a big s. This is the action. So you see that if you perform a transformation on the fields, and here it's a transformation that acts on exactly both on the position and on the field, if the action doesn't change, it means that we have a symmetry of the theory. Now, if we have a symmetry, Noether theorems tells us that we have a conserved current. Okay. So, yes?
So when x goes to s, do I not pick up an s to the d from a measure?
Pardon?
I pick up an s to the d from the ddx.
Yes. Yes?
Does that not need to cancel the s to the d for the phi? So for example, you have phi to the 4.
Well, let's do the calculation. You'll see that there is no problem. Let us compute s of phi s. This is integral d4x, well, d4x, 1/2 s squared d over dx mu of phi of sx mu. Okay, plus g over factorial 4 phi 4 of sx. Sorry, sx, and there is a square, I'm sorry. Okay? Okay. So now, of course, this is nothing but integral d4x, 1/2. I take the derivative inside, I get a factor s4, d mu of phi, so now this is a function d mu of phi of sx squared plus g over 4. Phi 4 of Sx. Okay? Now make a change of variables. X equal S minus 1 Y. Then this revised as integral d dy, d4y, I'm sorry. S minus 4, I make a change of variables. There was this S4 here also, I'm sorry. S4, here and here, S4, 1/2 d mu of phi of y squared plus phi 4, well, g divided by factorial 4, phi 4 of y squared. So this cancels to give 1, so this gives the action of phi. Okay? Good. Okay, so now let's go back to the fact that since there is a symmetry, there is a current. So let us compute this current in the general case when the dimension of space is not 4. What we found is that there is a current, g mu of x, and it is given by two terms. T mu nu x nu, where T mu is a stress energy tensor of the theory. Well, this comes from just the fact that we make a change of, we change x into Sx. So we change the coordinates, so there is a change proportional to the response of the theory onto a change in the coordinates. And then we get a term that comes from the transformation on the field with this S delta. So we get a d minus 2 over 2 phi d mu phi. Okay, so this is a stress energy tensor. And for the phi 4 theory, it is given T mu nu by d mu phi d nu phi minus delta mu nu times the Lagrangian density, namely 1/2 of d phi squared plus g over factorial 4 phi to the 4. Okay. Yes? Yes, you just apply Noether theorem. You have seen Noether theorem in the front-end course. I just apply Noether theorem to this symmetry. Okay? Yes, so this, well, of course, d mu of t mu nu is equal to 0 because of translation invariance. So if you compute d mu t mu nu, well, I don't have the calculation here, but well, basically, you find that d mu of t mu nu is proportional to is 0 because of the equation of motion. Thanks to the equation. And remember, the equation of motion of this theory are just minus the Laplacian operator apply to phi plus g divided by 6 phi cube equals 0. So if you take this and you insert a phi that obeys the equation of motion, then the stress energy tensor is divergence 3. And that comes, of course, for translation invariance. Okay? Okay, so that's an exercise. I won't do the calculation, but because basically that's an exercise of application of the Noether theorem. Instead of applying it either to translation invariance or to a continuum symmetry, for instance, the U1 symmetry to derive the conservation of the current in Maxwell's theory, you apply it to scale invariance. Okay. And then, let us compute the whether, let us check whether this current is conserved or not. Let's compute its divergence. So g mu, is g mu conserved? Okay, so we compute, we have the expression for g mu. What we find is, first we have, of course, a term that comes from x mu, t mu nu, that is x nu d mu of t mu nu. Then we may apply the d mu over x nu. So we get the trace of the stress energy tensor t mu mu. And then we get the factor d minus 2 over 2 d mu of phi d mu phi. Okay, so this is a trace of the stress energy tensor. This is another terms. And of course, this is has to be 0. Okay. So, and well, you walk a little bit, and what remains is d minus 2 over 2, phi times the Laplacian of phi, minus d g over factorial 4 phi to the 4. Okay. So I have already used the equation of motion to suppress this term. Remains this term. The D here is very important. The D comes from the fact that when we compute the trace of the stress energy tensor, there is a trace of delta mu nu. And the trace of delta mu nu comes from trace of delta mu nu is delta mu nu is, of course, the number of Lorentz components. Okay. Good. And now, using the equation of motion, again, since we know what delta phi is with respect to phi cube, we can write this equivalently as, let me write it here. D mu of G mu is finally equal, using the equation of motion, equivalently as D minus 4 G divided by factorial of 4 phi to the 4, or rewriting phi cube as a Laplacian of as the Laplace operator acting to C as D minus 4 divided by 4 phi times the Laplace operator acting on phi. Okay? So this is phi and this is phi. Okay. So those are two equivalent expressions thanks to the equation of motion. Okay? So you see that in D equal 4, so for the classic, this is for the classical theory, remember. D mu G mu is indeed equal to 0. So the theory is scale invariant, and that's, of course, is related to the fact that the scaling dimension of the coupling constant is equal to 0. When you make a scale transformation, G doesn't change. Okay. So now you may ask, what about the quantum theory? Well, in the quantum theory, what you have to do is you take expectation value in the vacuum of products of operator, and you have to ask, is d mu g mu at some point x inserted with the product of operator, is this always equal to 0? I have x1, xn, and of course, if this is different at no coinciding points. Okay. Well, in the quantum theory, in fact, there is something like the equation of motion that is valid. In fact, you have the quantum equation of motion states simply that if you have a product of operator phi of x1, phi of xn, and you insert the operator minus the Laplace operator of phi to some point x plus g over 6, the operator phi cube of x properly defined, this is always 0 as long as x1, xn, and x are all different. So you see that this is an operator now. You can define an operator that has the shape of the form of the classical equation of motion with expectation value is always 0. So it means that this operator taken as an operator is the same than this operator in the quantum theory. So you have a relation between two operators in a quantum theory. There are no different operators. On all the physical state of the theory, they act in the same way. Okay. So you would say, well, let us take d mu g mu to be this one for this operator. And then you run into trouble. And that's precisely because of the ultraviolet divergence. Because here, you have to compute something like phi of x1, phi of xn, and then some d minus 4 g over factorial 4 phi 4 of x. Well, you would say there is a d minus 4, so this operator is always 0. But warning, do not forget the ultraviolet regularization. So start from the scale invariant theory, introduce an ultraviolet regulator. If you have an ultraviolet regulator, this will violate scale invariance. So you will have additional terms. D mu g mu will be equal to what you have classically, plus terms. And you have to be careful that whether when lambda goes to infinity, does those terms go to zero? This is not at all obvious. And in fact, here I am just going to show you some magic. Let me. I took a wrong configuration. Oh, well, we just need that at the end. So let me go more. Okay. Let me use dimensional regularization. So I will not do the calculation. Remember, I just told you that it is possible to perform calculation in a dimension different from 4. And the rule of dimensional regularization is that whenever you have a log of lambda in using a regulator in momentum space, you get a 1 over d minus 4 pole in dimensional regularization. You see? And in fact, when you compute something like that here, this will be given by a sum of Feynman diagrams, where you have the x1, xn terms, and here you have a phi 4 of x term. You see? And so it's given by a sum of Feynman amplitudes. You have to insert renormalized quantity here, but you have a phi 4 with propagator connected to some of the vertices here that are connected to the vertices here. And among these, there is a Danjos diagram, which is the following one. You see, here you have a phi 4. Here you have the external vertices. Okay. Here, of course, you have a renormalized coupling. And here, you have a dangerous divergent diagram that we have studied. So believe me, in dimensional regularization, this dangerous gives a 1 over d minus 4 pole. And there is a d minus 4, which is seemingly harmless when d equals 4, but it's divided by a 1 over d minus 4. So d minus 4 times g, well, normalized by phi to the 4, phi 4, 4, contains a term that is, well, it's a Danjos term, so when the momenta here are very high. So this gives d minus 4 divided by d minus 4, g divided by factorial 4. I have an additional g here. And I have again a diagram like that, because I can reduce these small loops into a vertex at high momenta. Having the momenta very large here means that those two points are very close. Okay. So this gives a 5-4. And this gives one. Yes? No, they include many times, but this is the most dangerous one. This is the time that will be proportional to, this is the term that is proportional to 5-4.
Okay, so it's that plus other terms, but
the yes. Terms don't have to fall down. Yes, or they will come to higher orders. So I'm quite squishy. I just show you that you have to be careful when you compute product expectation of operator. You have to be very careful. Okay. And final result. So the final result is quite beautiful. Final result at one loop. So you see, when you insert that, you get something that is something that is in fact non-zero times the insertion of a 5-4 operator. You work out the calculation, the computation, the counting factor of the phenomenon. Final results, d mu g mu of x is equal to the beta function of the 4 point of the 5-4 theory times 1/4 5-4. You see. So it is non-zero. The scale invariance is broken. Broken by quantum effects. Of course, that's what we have seen in the explicit calculation. We have seen that the correlation function of the theory, once you take into account the one loop quantum correction, is no more scale invariant. So scale invariant is not valid in the theory, but you can rephrase this by just stating that the divergence of the current associated to the scale invariance is non-zero because the beta function is non-zero. So another definition of the beta function is that it is related, it amounts, it measures, it gives the amount of breakdown of the scale invariance by quantum effects. Okay. So the fact that the scale invariance is broken by the quantum effect, so that some invariance is broken, is just a phenomenon of anomaly. And in that case, we have an anomaly called the scale anomaly. So an anomaly is precisely that. An anomaly means that you have an invariance, you expect that a classical theory has some invariance, and you cannot quantize the theory satisfying this invariance. Okay. And anomalies are very important in quantum field theory. Well, first, the first example of anomaly was discovered in QED, and it's called the axial anomaly. It's the fact that if you change the fermionic, the Dirac field, by E I alpha gamma 5 psi Dirac, so if you perform a phase transformation on the Dirac field that is different for the right fermions and the left fermions, if we have a massless Dirac fermions, this is a symmetry of the classical Dirac equation, but it's not a symmetry of the quantum theory. And this has very important consequences, physical consequences, for pion physics. And these anomalies, you know, then there can be anomalies occurs in gauge theories, anomaly occurs in supergravity, in superstrings. Anomalies are everywhere. And in general, you know, this restricts a lot the number of quantum theory you have to construct, because many theories have a lot of invariance, very nice invariance classically. And when you quantize them, those many of those invariants disappear because of anomalies. And you have to check that your theory you built is free of those anomalies if you want to have something consistent. And that's, this has been a very important feature in the construction of the standard model and of its extension. You have to check that unwanted anomalies are not present in the theory. OK. So I think I will stop there. We already covered a lot. I haven't discussed the case of the massive theory, but probably I come back later in when I'm going to discuss renormalization in the Wilsonian framework, because then the mass comes out very naturally. You treat on the same footing the massless theory and the massive theory. Okay, so thank you.